See, it's 20 after the hour. Mr. Briggs, did you have something you wanted to read regarding?
I wanted to explain myself for why I'm sitting here. First of all, we should announce the item. It's okay. Item number 7.
Number 7.
Which is consideration of administrative civil liability, City of Santa Cruz, Department of Parks and Recreation regarding De La Viaga Golf Course. And the reason I'm here in this location is because these regional board proceedings involve a more controversial enforcement action, so we decided to separate the functions of staff members presenting evidence for consideration by the regional board from those of staff members providing advice to the presiding hearing officer, in this case the regional board chair and other regional board members. Assigning responsibility for advising the regional board members to staff other than those who will present testimony to the regional board members helps assure the fairness and impartiality of the regional board's proceedings. Accordingly, the staff participating in the proceedings have been separated into two groups. One group, and that's the group here, serves in a prosecutorial function in the proceedings and has assumed responsibility for presenting evidence to the regional board on this case. That team consists of staffers Kimberly Gonzalez, Chris Adair, me, and counsel Lori Oaken, and also Amanda Byrne, who did one of the inspections, is also here. The other team, the advisory team, assists the regional board chair in matters involving conduct of the hearing, and the advisory team will provide advice to the regional board chair and other regional board members in their deliberations on the evidence presented in the proceedings. The advisory team consists of counsel Cheryl Schaffner and technical advisor Harvey Packard. And I introduced Cheryl earlier. She is with the Office of the Chief Counsel of the State Water Resources Control Board and has been assigned specifically for this purpose today. Consistent with the separation of functions, members of the prosecution team have been and will be treated like any other party before the regional board throughout the proceedings and have not had any contact with regional board members or members of the advisory team on matters relating to the proceedings, except where those contacts are consistent with the limitations on ex parte contacts that apply to all other parties.
Okay, thank you. I think before we go any further, Mr. Daniels, did you want to make some comments?
Yes. I'm going to be stepping down from this matter. It's been alleged that, you know, because of the seeing the golf course on our tour, I'm conflicted, and I state that I'm not stepping down for that reason. But I think that that was perfectly acceptable. This was a duly constituted subcommittee of the regional board. We were doing a tour of the general area. We were indeed looking at one site, the disc golf course. We were not looking at the regular golf course. But the only way to get to the disc golf course is to drive through the regular golf course. So we indeed drove through it. We did not stop there. We just had vague comments as we were passing through, because for many of the folks on the tour, it's the first time they'd ever seen this golf course. So, and there was indeed some road grading, earth-moving stuff going on. So there was some comment about just generally, you know, what's that going on. And this subcommittee did report back to the main board, so there's no issue, I don't think, of ex parte communication or anything like that. You know, it was, as I say, a duly constituted subcommittee that did report back its findings to the board, so all the board heard it. And so it's not for any of those reasons that I'm stepping aside. The reason I'm stepping aside is, actually, I think there's a potential, and of course, a lot of this conflict is not actual, it's
bias, I think.
Yeah,
it's not a conflict of interest.
Right.
It's
yeah, there's no conflict, I don't think, involved here. But there could be some issue of bias on the other side. I'm the president of the Soquel Creek Water District, and we're currently talking about a partnership with the City of Santa Cruz for a $40-plus million joint desal project. And so I'm kind of conflicted because I would have no problem in terms of bias or conflict in saying I'm willing to fine the city for actions they have done that are bad. But if I do that, some people will look at it and say, oh, it should have been higher, And if you hadn't had this deal you're trying to do with the city, you would have made it higher. And of course, the city on the flip side is going to say, you know, if I fine them at all, well, that's bad. And you know, so as your position of the president of this district, you know, that's a problem. So I'm kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place here. And I think it's probably best just for myself and my water district connections to step aside on this one.
Okay. So you're going to sit in the audience. Okay. That leaves us with one other board member who has ostensibly been challenged for bias, and that's Mr. Jeffries. And I've got some questions for you, Mr. Jeffries. As you know, the city has alleged that both you and Mr. Daniels in particular, and then the entire board in general, are biased against the city. These allegations appear to presume bias based on two things. One, the Arana Gulch subcommittee's visit to the area in October, and two, the board's discussion at the May 13 meeting in response to a public comment expressing concerns about the erosion problems in the gulch relating to the disc golf course, the disc course near the golf course. For the record, I'm going to ask you a few questions here. Question number one is, for what purpose was the subcommittee formed?
It was formed to review a location in Santa Cruz Mountains that was known as the De La Vega disc course, to investigate that and bring back a report to the board.
And what were you supposed to investigate?
An erosion problem that was brought forth by some community members of that particular area.
Okay. Did it involve inquiring into conditions at the golf course during that October visit?
No, we just drove through the golf course on our way to the location that we were looking at, and I believe the staff took some photographs so we could have some visual items to bring back to the board. Other than that, we didn't stop at the golf course. We did notice that there was some equipment there, and that was about it.
Did you discuss the golf course during that visit?
No.
Were there any enforcement proceedings underway during your visit in October?
No.
Did you have anything whatsoever to do with the investigation and preparation of this enforcement matter?
No.
During the May 13th, 2005 board meeting, when Ms. Hobbs brought up the issue of erosion problems at the disc course, did you express any opinions about the merits of the proposed administrative civil liability on the golf course?
No, I don't think there was any discussion of that at all, and I didn't know there was one coming forward.
Have you formed any opinions about the complaint at issue today that will prevent you from having an open mind, considering all the evidence presented in this proceeding and rendering an unbiased, objective decision based on that evidence?
Well, I'm a person that takes all the information before I make a decision, and so far all I have is information was provided by letters that were submitted to us in staff reports. And this is a public hearing, and I have not heard from the public, so I have not made a decision on this item.
All right, and then more generally for the rest of the board.
Could I just add a couple more things?
Sure.
Just a couple points. Number one, I don't play golf. I don't have a membership in that course. I have not been in that area since the day we visited it. And so consequently, I don't believe I have any conflicts. If you think I have one, you can pull my 700 report. It's on public review. And you can see if I have any financial assets or any other thing that relates to that particular area.
Well, I think the challenge really is to whether maybe you have...
I just covered all bases, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Well, that was the 700 is... Like conflicts, but
well, that's conflict. But you know, yeah. if anybody suggested I had any financial interest in
right.
it, that would show that if I had
right.
financial interest, and I don't. So I was just covering all bases,
okay.
so to take care of any further challenges.
Okay. All right. Thank you. And then more generally for the entire board, and because this is unusual, you have to bear with me. The city has alleged that the entire board is potentially biased from what has happened. So I'm going to ask each of the remaining board members this question, starting down at this end, Dr. Press. Have you formed any opinions about the complaint at issue today that would prevent you from having an open mind, considering all the evidence presented in this proceeding, and rendering an unbiased, objective decision based on that evidence?
No.
Okay. Do I need to repeat the question for you, Mr. Shaw?
I understood it the first time.
Okay. And your response to that question? Okay. You've answered the question. Okay. Dr. Hunter?
No.
And Mr. Villeneuve?
No, I wasn't even present in May.
Okay. Well, and have you heard anything, Mr. Villeneuve, about this that has potentially biased your decision-making ability today?
Absolutely not.
Okay. All right. And I would answer that question in the negative. In addition, now the city has also alleged that both our board counsel, Cheryl Schaffner, and the staff enforcement team counsel, Lori Oaken, have not properly separated functions for this matter. Ms. Schaffner, have you had any ex parte contacts with enforcement team staff, their counsel, Ms. Oaken, or Mr. Briggs regarding the merits of this matter?
No, I have not.
Okay. Ms. Oaken, have you had any contacts, ex parte contacts, with board counsel or technical staff regarding the merits of this matter?
No, I have not.
Okay. And I would ask the folks from the city of Santa Cruz if they have any comments that they would like to offer at this time about this particular bias challenge.
I'll introduce myself more formally, but no, and I just want to, I do want to comment, thank you very much for taking this seriously and in the right light in terms of our raising those issues, and I appreciate your time in going through that.
Okay. All right. Okay. Now we'll return to our more formal process for dealing with these items. This is the time and place for a hearing by the Central Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board for consideration of a proposed administrative civil liability order against the City of Santa Cruz regarding the De La Viega Golf Course. The order of presentation at this hearing will be as follows. 1. Witnesses called by the board staff. 2. Cross-examination of regional board staff witnesses by the discharger. 3. Witnesses called by the discharger. 4. Cross-examination of discharger's witnesses by regional board staff. 5. Representatives of agencies. 6. Other interested persons. 7. Summation or closing statements by the discharger and regional board staff. Board members and staff counsel may ask questions to clarify testimony of a witness at any time. Each person who testifies at this hearing shall begin by stating his or her name and address unless the address has already been given. All persons who may testify at this hearing, please stand. Please stand even if you don't plan to testify but are involved in this matter. Raise your right hand and take the following oath. Do you solemnly swear that the testimony which you will give in this matter is the truth?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Mr. Packard. Mr. Briggs.
Thank you. Okay. Presenting the staff's testimony will be the person who prepared our staff report, and that's Kimberly Gonzalez of our staff.
Thank you for the introduction, Roger. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Ms. Schaffner. I'm here to present the item number 7, administrative civil liability for De La Vega Golf Course in the city of Santa Cruz. The 108-acre, 18-hole municipal golf course is located at 401 Upper Park Road in Santa Cruz, as shown on this map. You can see the site is located above Highway 1 and east of Highway 17. I obtained this photo from the internet, and it's dated in the 1990s, so it's not that recent. But I highlighted some of the major water bodies in the area near the golf course. Those include Branson Forty Creek and Arana Gulch. You can also see in this photograph the heavily wooded areas that I'll be referring to as canyons. And these areas in the northern and western side drain towards Branson Forty Creek. These on the eastern side drain towards Arana Gulch. And I'm not certain where these southern canyons drain, either to the city's municipal system or directly towards the surface waters. The city of Santa Cruz enrolled in the stormwater permit before construction at the golf course began. The golf course was an existing facility, and they were just doing some renovations. According to the discharger's June 28th brief, they clarified that the total disturbed area on the project was 10 acres. That included renovation of 3 greens complexes and all 18 tees, as well as construction of some golf cart paths and 2 restrooms. The 3 greens complexes that were under construction include number 1 in this area, number 18 near the pond, and number 5. The majority of my presentation this afternoon will include site photographs from staff inspections. Amanda Byrne, Water Board staff, conducted the first inspection in October, and I conducted the other 2 inspections listed here. Ms. Byrne called Mr. Miles Hicks, the golf course superintendent, the day before she arrived to do her inspection. Ms. Byrne's photographs show that there were no erosion or sediment controls anywhere on the site. As a reminder, erosion control practices are those that protect the soil surface and prevent soil particles from being detached by rainfall or wind. Erosion control treats soil as a resource with value and works to keep it in place. Examples of erosion control practices include seeding and vegetating disturbed areas, applying erosion control blankets, applying plastic tarps, or installing mulch, and these can be temporary or permanent measures. On the other hand, sediment control practices trap soil particles after they've been dislodged and moved by wind or water. Sediment controls are generally passive systems that rely on filtering or settling soil particles out of the water or wind that's transporting them. Sediment controls treat soil as a waste product and work to remove it. Examples of some sediment control practices include silt fence, sandbags, and other filtration devices. So these are just photographs from Amanda's inspection in October. You see various areas that had begun construction, sediment on paved areas, and sediment in the streets. Ms. Byrne discussed the lack of best management practices, erosion and sediment controls with Mr. Hicks while she was on site. She also obtained a copy of the Stormwater Pollution Prevention Plan. And I'd like to point out that the discharger does not dispute that there were no BMPs on October 5th. One week before the December 8th inspection, I called Mr. Hicks and notified him that I would be inspecting the site on December 8th. He agreed to meet me at the site on that day. It was raining on the day of the inspection. Regarding how much rain on the day of the inspection and the days preceding and following, I obtained this data from the California Irrigation Management Information System, Department of Water Resources website, for the station at the golf course. In his January 24th letter, Parks and Recreation Superintendent Steve Hammack claimed that 5 inches of rain fell on that day, the day of my inspection. However, you can see that it actually rained approximately 3.5 inches on the day of the inspection, and that the 4-day total was approximately 5 inches. In the same letter, Mr. Hammack claimed that these were extreme weather conditions. However, over the past 10 years, we've seen 4 days in which it rained 3 inches or more in a single day, and 9 instances where it rained 5 inches or more in a four-day consecutive period. So actually, rain events that were similar to the December 8th rain event, or more intense than that event, are typical for this area. On December 8th, I met with Mr. Hicks as planned. Mr. Lee Bilberry with Golf Course Builders International was also present at the site. Throughout the inspection, I pointed out problems to Mr. Hicks and Mr. Bilberry. However, Mr. Bilberry was riding in a separate vehicle, and he actually left during the inspection about halfway to two-thirds of the way through the three-hour inspection. This photograph shows the parking lot area near the clubhouse, where there are some stockpiles without any sediment controls or erosion controls. Runoff from this area was discharging to the low point in the parking lot and discharging down to the adjacent canyon, which you can see here. This is a photograph of Greens Complex 18, one of the three larger construction areas. You can see the area has been graded here. And you can also see the area has been graded down in this other photo. There were no erosion controls in these disturbed areas. There was, however, a silt fence at the very bottom, right before the canyon. And there was one more silt fence that I don't think you can see in these photographs, but it's towards the top up here. And the water was flowing down the slope towards the canyon in both of these photos. Photograph.
Was the silt fence doing its job?
We're going to take a look at that now.
Okay.
The silt fence in the upper part of that area was located below a drain inlet, and that drain inlet was unprotected and was receiving runoff from these unprotected slopes. There was a pipe discharging at the very bottom of that area to the silt fence at the bottom of the Greens Complex 18 area, and you can see here that the silt fence is overwhelmed with sediment and discharging sediment-laden water into the canyon area. And this is just a close-up of the discharge. So note that silt fence was not doing its job. This is a photograph of another large area under construction, Greens Complex 1. You can see, again, there are no erosion controls in this area and no sediment controls as either. Runoff was flowing down towards the canyons again, and in the photograph on the right, you can see there was a silt fence installed and sediment-laden water accumulating behind it. You can also see the discharge of sediment-laden water to the canyon on the other side of the silt fence.
Can I ask you, do you know on that former slide where that drain emptied out into?
It was my understanding from asking Miles Hicks that it drained to this.
Oh,
this
pipe.
That was my understanding.
Okay.
This is a photograph of the Greens Complex 5 area. It's the third large area that was under construction. The photograph on the left shows silt fence that was improperly installed. You can see that it wasn't properly tucked under to prevent sediment and water, sediment-laden water from going underneath it. The photograph on the right shows an area without any erosion controls, and you can see that the silt fence is almost overwhelmed. Keep in mind that it was raining very heavily that day, and water was accumulating behind the silt fence, and so I have no doubt that within a few minutes, during my inspection, there may have been a discharge there.
Should a silt fence hold up under conditions like that? I mean, are they designed for, this type of rain event?
Silt fences, that's an interesting question because it depends on the amount of runoff coming to that point and what other types of controls are in place to remove sediment, such as if there had been erosion controls on this Greens Complex 5 area, then the silt fence would not have been receiving so much sediment in the water, and it would not have filled up as quickly. So it depends on the topography of the site as well as other BMPs that are in place.
But Ms. Gonzalez, it would also have been receiving a lot of water. It might have been cleaner water, but it would have been getting a lot of water on it.
Exactly. Cleaner water could pass through the silt fence. The problem when there's muddy water is that it clogs up the silt fence and it just starts climbing, the sediment behind it starts rising.
If it rains hard enough, can the water knock down the silt fence, even clean water?
That, again, would depend on the velocity of the water, the flow rate, and the slopes behind
but
the silt fence. It could.
Thank you.
Best management practices manuals typically specify that the silt fence should be placed approximately 5 feet away from the toe of a slope to allow room for the water to slow down after it comes down off the slope before hitting the silt fence.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. Nobody appears to be stopping the timer for board questions.
I was keeping track. We used 10 minutes, and I figured about 3 minutes for interruptions for questions.
Okay.
So I
and
think we've
why
used
don't we
10 minutes.
Let's go over this. How much time is staff going to use? Are we allocating equal amounts of time?
Staff has requested 45 minutes for their presentation with a reservation of a right to request more if the response from the city raised new issues. And then the city asked for an hour and, it was 95 minutes, as I recall, a little over an hour and a half. And that was before the request for time from the staff was before the city's response. So I'm not sure if they still believe 45 minutes is adequate, but the city justified its request for 95 minutes based on its additional testimony that they need to present, and that's the way it was left.
Okay, so 45 and 95.
45 and 95.
Okay, so let's, Harvey, so Mr. Briggs, you've used 10 minutes?
Correct.
You'd have 35 minutes. Continue.
This next photograph also shows the Greens Complex 5 area. Again, you can see that there were no erosion controls in this area. The graded area extends all the way up to where you can see these are trucks. There's a truck and a golf cart up here, and there's quite a bit of land here. Runoff from this area was heading down towards the bottom left of this photograph, and I'd like to comment that this silt fence was improperly installed in that it wasn't following the contours of the site, and so water was actually flowing along the silt fence down in this direction in a concentrated manner. There was concentrated flow in that area. That water was flowing down towards this general area, and you can see here silt fences that had a ditch dug underneath it, and it makes the silt fence completely useless. This photograph on the right is from the bottom of the silt fence looking up. You can see the water pouring out from above. This grassy area was one of the areas that the discharger claimed was acting as a turf bioswale. However, when you get concentrated flows through these grassy areas, it does little to remove sediment. And when you're trying to employ a turf bioswale, you need either sheet flow or very flat area to allow the particles to settle out. In this case, it was on a slope and it was concentrated flow, so that was not an effective bioswale. This is another photograph of the same area. In this photograph, you can see silt fence overwhelmed with sediment. This area was also receiving some of that runoff that I mentioned before. You can see the path that the runoff, the sediment-laden water had taken through the grass and down towards the low point in this area, shown with this arrow here. The photograph on the right is from the bottom of this area looking up towards this first line of silt fence. Again, with this second line of silt fence, water was concentrated down here. It wasn't aligned with the contour, so instead of just passing through, it was concentrated and flowing towards the side of the silt fence. Note these wooden planks and the low point here, because we'll show them again in this other slide. There's the wooden planks up there, and here's the low point where sediment-laden water was discharging to a canyon. Here you can see the concentrated flow that was flowing along the silt fence and going down through the grass, down this fairly steep slope in a concentrated manner towards the discharge and discharging to the creek. This is a close-up of the discharge to the canyon. The sandbags here give you some idea as to the width of the discharge, and keep in mind it was raining, and so there was quite a bit of water flowing through there. Now I'm going to show some photographs of various tees. Keep in mind that all 18 tees were under construction. In these photographs, you can see there's no erosion controls on the disturbed areas. There's various locations where silt fence is failing. You had concentrated flows discharging towards the canyons, overwhelmed silt fences. More photographs of overwhelmed silt fences. These are all different locations. You can see the sediment-laden water on the other side of the silt fence discharging into the canyons. In the photograph on the left, there was an improperly installed fiber roll. You can see that the stakes are to one side of the fiber roll, not staked through it as is required for proper installation. The fiber roll also was not trenched into the soil to prevent water from running underneath it. The photograph on the right shows a cart path curb that has been buried by sediment from one of the T construction areas. And there were no sediment controls to prevent material sediment from moving into the street, into the golf cart path or the adjacent street, which is right next to it. There were no sediment controls in that area to prevent migration. In this photograph, we see the staging area for construction activities. The photograph on the left, you can see ponded water. It appeared that the storm drain in this corner was blocked, as well as the storm drain on the opposite corner, but I couldn't see, due to the amount of water and debris, I couldn't see exactly how that was blocked. There was an oily sheen that I mentioned in the first notice violation letter. There's an oily sheen in this area, but I don't believe that there was actually a discharge during my inspection. There were exposed gasoline containers in that area. The discharger's stormwater pollution prevention plan specifically requires that such materials be stored under cover and in secondary containment, which these were not. These were exposed to rain. the right-hand photo, you can see the paved area in the staging area with a significant amount of sediment. Again, this was draining towards these two corners, which were blocked. So although there appeared to be no discharge at the time of the inspection, there were violations of the stormwater pollution prevention plan. After the December inspection, I sent out a notice of violation and requested a response from the discharger by January 27th. I then conducted an unannounced inspection on January 12th before the response was due. And I received a response to the first notice of violation and December inspection shortly after the January inspection. However, the response only addressed the problems noted in the December inspection. And I bring that up because the discharger mentioned something to the contrary in their brief, their June 28th brief. So this is the Greens Complex 18 area again. This time it was sunny. It was not raining during the inspection, but it had rained the day before. Again, I met with Mr. Miles Hicks. You can see that on this Greens Complex, again, there were no erosion controls. And there was a silt fence along the bottom of this area, similar to December, only this time they had placed pipes through the silt fence. I'm going to take a closer look at that. And this is the same canyon. Here are some close-up photographs of pipes going through silt fences. In the photograph at the left, you can see that there's sediment at the mouth of the pipe. Not only are the pipes going through the silt fence, but there's also daylighting under the silt fence. They were improperly installed. The silt fence is completely useless in removing sediment when used in this matter. Mr. Hicks said that they...
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
When you say there's daylighting under the fence...
Yes.
Is it necessary then to actually insert that silk fence, base's silk fence, into the ground to anchor it? How's it anchored?
That's exactly right. So you basically make a J shape with the silk fence and fill some sediment into the shape so that it would not become untucked and allow water to pass underneath. Mr. Hicks said that they had intentionally placed pipes through the fences to relieve pressure on the silt fence, basically to let sediment-laden water bypass the silt fence and discharge through the canyon untreated and unfiltered. The discharger's April 4th letter and June 28th brief also say that this was an intentional